hard to even find the words to kind of describe. And, you know, just the feeling for me, like a lot of it was just, you know, a lot of the enjoyment for me just came from them, you know, their reaction and their excitement and them feeling, you know, feeling like you got the job done. Like you made your parents proud. And, you know, for the longest, that's been a lot of, you know, what drives me, because, you know, I have such, you know, I hold them in such high regard and so on. So I just, you know, I just want to make them proud. And you know, lucky for me, they don't apply any specific parameters like, oh, we're only proud if you become this specific thing. You know, it's just that you excel in whatever you choose to do as, you know, as our child or whatever. As long as you excel in it, you know, that's what makes us proud. And it was great to really have that moment.
You're listening to the Digital Jamaica Podcast, a show created to inform, motivate, and inspire more Jamaicans to explore the wonderful world of tech. I'm your host, Katie Francis, and on today's show, we are talking to somebody who is literally very special, very unique, very rare. Dr. Kamir Ricketts is a good friend of the platform and the founder of the Minds Off Initiative. And he has just completed his PhD and he's now a computational biologist. Now that may sound weird to you. You're going, a computer, what? Yes, it's a relatively young field. Not a lot of people are doing it. It's like less than 10 years old. And here is this young, brilliant, black, Caribbean Jamaican man who, just because of some programs that he did while he was in high school by UWE, getting in the lab and talking to experts and exploring, and because he had parents that were supportive and were willing to get him anywhere he needed to go, here he is making history on a world stage. It's a big accomplishment for him. But on a national level, it is major, major, right? And if you sense the excitement, it's because I am so proud of what he has done and the excitement as to what he can contribute to humanology. Is that even a thing? To just the development in the biological field is amazing. And it's because of opportunities that he would have had right here. He went to school right here. He went to high school, primary school. His education is grounded in Jamaica, right? And here he is just excelling and being, you know, black boy joy. And I'm so excited for it. You know, as we continue to have this conversation about STEAM, not just STEM, but, you know, science, technology, engineering, the arts, mathematics, and we continue to explore ways that we can get our young people, our children, into more scientific fields, into more tech fields, these programs matter. And as he said, his wish is that more young people, children, high school, primary school outside of Kingston, can get the same kind of opportunities he had to go through these same kinds of programs, because it really opens up your mind. Guys, exposure is a hell of a thing. And, you know, let's work towards that. Let's getting more of our children exposed to possible. Yeah, this was such an awesome conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys go and support Kamir and the Minds Off Initiative and every single thing he's trying to do over on that platform. And let's lift our brethren up, you know, and support him all the way as he continues to make history. So without much more from me, Kamir Ricketts.
My name is Kamir Ricketts, or I guess now Dr. Kamir Ricketts. I'm a computational biologist or bioinformatics scientist. I studied at Weill Cornell Medicine. That's where I got my PhD. But I'm originally from Montego Bay, Jamaica. So my educational background, you know, stems from from Jamaica. So I went to Eba Prep. I went to Catching Hall Primary. I went to high school, like Herbert Marks Technical High School, the premier high school of Montego Bay. After that, I also went to sixth form there. And while I was there, I was, you know, exploring subjects in the sciences and in programming. And then I got the opportunity to study for to get my undergraduate degree at the University of Georgia. So ended up leaving Jamaica, coming to the U.S. to study in Georgia. And that's where I kind of explored more facets or more areas within the sciences. So I started exploring microbiology, a lot, biotechnology. And eventually, after finishing undergrad, decided I wanted to do my PhD in computational biology and work on cancer and cancer genomics. So a lot of my work over the last 5 years in my PhD has really been in developing tools and algorithms to help us better understand different types of cancer, not any one specific type, but I've worked in projects involving prostate cancer, breast cancer, liver cancer, and so on, brain cancer as well, with in the lab of Dr. Iman Hajrasouli at Weill Cornell Medicine. So I just recently finished up, finished my PhD in December of last year. So it's a pandemic degree. I'm moving on to work in industry. So I'll be a bioinformatics scientist at a tech company called NVIDIA. I'll be working on their genomics team.
Wow, that is, don't know when none of that just mean I want to go, but we're going to get into it because earlier, did you say that you are a mathematical scientist? Is that what you said?
I'm computational scientist. So I'm a computational
scientist. Okay, can you just break that down for us? Yeah. Because that sounds like one wolipa.
Yeah.
That sounds like wolipa things.
So
can you, for us lay people, what is a computational scientist? What exactly do you guys do?
Yeah, and I think it's something that stems from this, you know, very general trend that is happening in a lot of industries where you're seeing, you know, as technology evolves and as the kind of data we're dealing with, regardless of industry, becomes more and more, we're now seeing a need where we can no longer, our Excel spreadsheets can't make sense of it the way we want to. We can't, as humans, look at all this data and information, and, you know, the science is no different, you know, just like in the financial sector and a lot of different sectors, you know, the amount of data now that we're able to generate using our you know, what we think in traditional science as like experiments, and the data we get out of that is so enormous now that we've now seen opportunity to introduce computational or algorithms or methods from, say, the computer science area to analyze that data and make sense of it. So that's really what a computational scientist does, is a merging of, say, genetics and these life sciences with computer science. So, for example, once we were able to finally decode the human genome, right? And that is made up of about 3 billion nucleotides. We say we can sit down and as a human read through all that information. So that's where we start using these algorithms now and these computer science approaches to make sense of that. You know, what does this string of nucleotides mean when it comes to what kind of gene it is, what that gene does, and that kind of stuff. So you know, in simple terms, it's really just applying these statistical methods and algorithms and approaches from the computer science world, right, to data that is biological in nature. So just like how you see people applying a lot of, you know, machine learning and statistics to data that is financial in nature, in predicting how, you know, the stock market going to look and are that kind of stuff, the same kind of idea where it's just the nature of the data, is where the data coming from that is changing.
Okay, so in this instance, the data deals with, is based in biology?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so you're looking at human beings, living things, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. So not necessarily human beings, living but anything. Things. Yeah,
within right. Just living thing. Mm-hmm. Right. So the data you're researching, looking at, analyzing is about living things. So it's a marriage of two true, still, because computers and stuff like that is still science. Mm-hmm. So it's just a marriage of two different areas of science.
Yeah. Yeah.
So biology being married with data analysis, yeah. data gathering, data research, yeah. and the technology that can help you guys to access the data, mm-hmm. analyze the data, and then use that data to for cancer treatments, yeah. for cancer research, yeah. etc.
And okay. Much more closer and more formal kind of combination, because yeah. you know, technology has been a part of science, you know. Forever, yes. but now it is very much formalized, and there's a whole, you know, whole carved out a whole niche now. As soon as, especially once we were able to kind of sequence DNA, that's really when
right.
the need for it really, you know, kicked off. So there's almost a lot of times in the world, you know, different people are developing different approaches and inventing different things for different reasons, and it might not be until 5 years down the line where you find the perfect use case for that kind of technology and so on. And I think once we were able to sequence the human genome, a lot of the things that were being developed on the computer science side, we're like, oh, this mm-hmm. is where we can actually use this to make sense. And now it, you know, have implications for human health and society at large, right? So, and that's kind of why I like it, because I was always interested in kind of programming and computer science and that kind of stuff. But for me personally, not that anything's wrong with, you know, say building word processors, for example, and being a software engineer that makes that, but I kind of always wanted the kind of development that I'm involved in to have kind of a larger goal and hopefully larger impact. So that's really why I gravitated to this area.
Hold up. Did you just casually smooth over the part where you say you're a software engineer?
Did
you just casually do like, oh yeah, I don't mean because I'm a software engineer. I mean, this is natural progression.
No.
First of all, you're talking about having like three really big careers in one, right?
Yeah. In a lot of ways.
Because talk to us about that software engineering thing that you just casually glide over a while ago.
So in a lot of ways. So, you know, it's really about how you identify. So I don't personally identify as a software engineer. But right. a lot of what goes into, you know, training and becoming a computational biologist, it's going to be heavy on the programming side. So you learn to develop. And for me, right. how I even got interested in programming was building applications. I went to Caribbean Institute of Technology while I was in sixth form to do an associate degree in IT. And, you know, we were basically, a lot of that was geared at building applications. I learned how to build those Java. You know, C right. was my first language, and then I went to Java and so on. So a lot of my interest, and I still think, you know, it's just amazing to be able to write code, and you know, you just see, you know, kind of things come to life, and that's kind of the same way in terms of how we build things. So like we the software that we're building in this case, or the application that we're building now, is not, you know, a web platform to do something in particular, but instead it's a tool that you can run on a particular patient's genome to be able to identify everywhere where they have a mutation. So, you know, you're a software engineer and you're building software, but that software's purpose now is to be able to run on, you know, a thousand patients, you know, every 30 minutes, and within each of those patients, be able to point out really quickly where mutations are. So you see, it's really where the application is, and that's why I think is cool. And not everybody in the computational biology space, you know, do heavy programming or development, but a lot of them eventually touch it in some way, shape, or form.
But let's talk about you doing it though, mm-hmm. because I think that's an amazing thing. You know how I feel about you and people like mm-hmm. you in that space. I tell you all the time, I am supremely impressed mm-hmm. by the level of skill and expertise that you guys have. And you're like, what? You're 10. Come here, hold on.
Don't be disrespectful now. Oh, no, man. I'm 27.
You're 27. I mean, you're still a baby. Come on. You're 27. So that means that at 27, you already have your doctorate. Mm-hmm. You're already versed in developing the software. Mm-hmm. You now have the ability to not just develop the software, but use the software, take the information from that software, and then try to create something else that may fix a problem or at least be able to give the people them who can fix the problem the information and data that they need to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're doing a lot, and this is a relatively young field, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very young. And I think, you know, one thing, you know, one of my goals, especially through my work with Mind Jamaica, is to get more people exposed to this, because we need more black scientists in general.
Definitely.
More Jamaican scientists in general. But, it's, you know, but this field, you know, it's even worse. So I think it's something that over time, I think, I speak to a lot more students now who are looking at data science and that kind of stuff. It's very surprising versus, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, students weren't really thinking about that. And the same way, students who are interested in data science, I see them as having potential to become these computational biologists in some shape or form, because you're really applying a lot of data science approaches to biological data. And the cool thing about computational biology is that you can find your niche along the spectrum. So there's a set of computational biologists, and especially when they come from a pure programming background or a pure math background or science background, they're often the ones in doing the tool development, the software development. So they're coming up with novel approaches, novel algorithms to analyze data in new and meaningful ways, right? But there's also after that, there's so like downstream from that, there's a whole set of other computational biologists where they're not necessarily the developers of novel algorithms, but they know how to string different algorithms and tools that have been previously developed into like this new pipeline that output kind of information and make sense of information and help inference in a different way. So a lot of people, some people might not be, you know, might not see themselves on that end of the spectrum, but on the analysis side where you're just looking at data and like, you know, making amazing plots and figures and telling a story through those plots to come to some new kind of inference or conclusion, you know, on the kind of data you're working with, whether it be cancer data or in other spaces. I think it's cool. So there's a lot of space there for people to really explore and find where they're good at.
Yeah. And when we say the field is young, I mean, how long has this been around? How long has this marriage been going?
I feel like I would probably say from about 2003, I think, is when I would say. Really.
So we're talking in the 2000s,
then? For sure.
This century?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So that's very, very, very young.
Yeah. So the Human Genome Project, that the one big project that really, you know, was the first time we sequenced the human genome, that was completed, I believe, in 2003. And from that, you know, a lot of the work that went into that really spawned this era now in science.
What's the name of that what's the name of the gentleman, the scientist who was responsible for that
Human Genome Project? The name is him right now too. I actually can't remember. It's a big collaborative effort, but I think I know what you're talking about, but
Francis Collins. Dr. Francis Collins, because I've been hearing about the Human Genome Project, and it's something that, you know, I have a baseline, very baseline understanding of what it is. But when you're talking about sequencing human genome, what does that even mean?
So,
and why is that necessary or relevant?
So it really just means now we're able to electronically represent and to figure out the order of nucleotides in your DNA, right? So you have about four nucleotides mainly, and they're often represented as letters, so A for adenine and so on. So you have A, T, C, G, right? So the order in which those let's just call them letters for the, you know, their nucleotide, but let's call the order in which those letters appear in your DNA determines the kind of proteins you're making, right? And the enzymes that you're making and how your body functions and really drives everything, even your phenotypic characteristics, your physical characteristics, right? All of that is determined by the DNA. And similarly in disease, a lot of genetic diseases are caused by mutations or abnormalities within that DNA that causes you to produce a particular protein that doesn't work how it should, and so on. So the idea was that, okay, we reach a point where in order to really understand some of these diseases, we really need to know where those mutations are, right? And what it is that it should be and why it is that it's mutating in that way. So we wanted a way to basically have a readout. So on our computer screen, we can read out in each chromosome what the DNA is, and we know what the DNA should look like in a quote-unquote healthy or normal, human DNA in that location. And then if we have a patient now that is exhibiting a particular disease trait or, particular disease phenotype, then we can compare what their DNA is to what we expect a healthy, normal human DNA to be. And from that process, figure out what could potentially be causing this disease. And then, you're now down a path to trying to figure out, okay, how do we then either correct that issue or be able to pick up on it earlier. So that's why I see a lot of people now, even in that breast cancer, like BRCA1 and BRCA2 screening is so helpful now within the space, because allowing us to find markers that we know now are highly predictive of whether or not you're likely to develop, something like breast cancer and so on. And that's all from the Human Genome Project and our ability to have a readout of this information, right?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So just the fact that we have the ability to do that, I think is absolutely amazing. And that's a part of, so you are now, what you're doing is almost like a next step after this. So now that we're able to sequence the genome, okay, what data can we get from this now? And then how can we use it? And that's where you guys come in. That's where computational biologists come in. So you're like the next step in that chain, right? Exactly. So, okay, you get that now. You take that, you run it through your fancy programs and you spit data back to you, and then you can take that data and put that into research.
That is so cool. So for example, say we have a set of patients with we have a cohort of say 100,000 patients, and we're able to sequence their DNA now. But computational biologists have developed approaches now where we can take that sequence information and identify everywhere in the genome where there's a deletion, right? There's missing information, right? To simply think of it. So there's a mutation that removes DNA. And we look at all those 100,000 patients that have the same kind of cancer, and we see that, 90,000 of them have the same exact kind of deletion, right? That is something that we, you look for and that would is something that you say, okay, maybe that is something that is causal. Maybe that is something that is driving the tumor. Maybe that is a mutation that the cancer needs to continue to grow. So that's how you kind of, and there are many, that's just one example of say a research question that we'd use that kind of data for. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And this is the field that you've decided to throw yourself in. It sounds like a lot of work though. Kamir, what made, well, I know you said that it started with you doing the Caribbean Institute, you're doing the IT, you're moving on, but what made you want to do this? What is the appeal, apart from being on the groundbreaking cusp of human biology? Apart from that little thing, why, as a black man, a black Jamaican man who is underrepresented in science, just being a black man is an underrepresentation in science, but being a black Caribbean man is an underrepresentation. Being a black Caribbean man from Jamaica is even more of an underrepresentation. So is that kind of what drove
I think a lot of it stems from, like, you have to have a lot of confidence to say tackle big, you know, things that seem like a huge mountain to climb. And I think one of the best things, you know, my parents, Consuelo and Never Ricketts, they've always kind of pushed into me, driven into, you know, if you want to call it a cliche or not, that you can be anything you want to be, or, you know, there's nothing, just because you maybe come from a small island or so on, there's absolutely nothing out there that, you know, you can't go achieve if you want to, right? And I think they've, each step along the way, they've been so supportive and really helping to drive me to accomplish things that, you know, the premise of it being, you know, a new field or a lot of work or so on isn't something to deter you, right? Something to excite you. It's a great challenge. And then also I started to get really interested in the sciences, you know, grade 6, grade 7. My parents, you know, bought me, you know, science books and all that kind of stuff. And I was reading and kind of exploring. And, you know, at that time, you don't know what area in science, but even my teachers have always been, you know, I've to show to the teachers at Herbert Marsh Technical High School, like they've been such a driving force in kind of my path. And even though some of them did the classic thing where, you know, once you're good in science, they kind of push you to be a physician and so on. But I think I was fortunate to know from an early age that wasn't my path. Like I think since eighth grade, I knew, like, I completely wrote off being a physician, being a clean, you know, being a doctor in that way, right? And I think that helped me to have a clear mind, because a lot of students, they go through, you know, a dilemma, because they, you know, a lot of people want them to be doctors, but they might feel like they shouldn't, and because of that, they waste a lot of time, you know, sometimes going down a path that they shouldn't have. But anyway, you know, a lot of those experiences kind of went into me kind of picking the sciences. I did a lot of programs where I could. So like in seventh grade, I was encouraged by a teacher. And when I say encouraged by a teacher, she drew me up and said, "Me go apply to this the science program." My mom as well was a part of that. My mom was the one who found it in the newspaper. This program that we were having at UWE, where every summer, you know, boys from across the island would go to UWE and participate in research, you know, do biotechnology and robotics and so on. And that really opened my eyes to what it could be. You know, just exciting stuff. And I really wish more students across the island could get that experience, because the issue is that so much of our, you know, academic and our research kind of resources are in Kingston.
Yeah,
so students outside of Kingston, a student from say Westmoreland, it's half of them don't, you know, have the luxury of say volunteering in a research lab, you know, during the semester or even over the summer sometimes. So I think that would, you know, really expose a lot more students. But I got the opportunity to, and that was super impactful in my journey. So that's when I knew I was going to go down that path, you know, be a research scientist. And then once I also started exploring the computer science fields, I really was stuck, because I was like, oh, do I want to go be a software engineer or a network administrator? Because I enjoyed even the networking side of, say, IT as well. Or I want to be a research scientist. And, you know, my whole thing was I'll keep doing both until someone forces me to choose. And so once I got to university, I, you know, and this is why kind of speaking to people who have, you know, have more experience, more knowledge than you, and really being a sponge for knowledge from them is helpful. Because I was speaking to a professor just after class randomly, and was explaining my dilemma to him, and he was like, "Why you have a dilemma? Those, you know, both those industry fields sound like bioinformatics, sounds like computational biology." And that was my first time ever even hearing the word or phrase. And that really, you know, once I got home and researched it and looked up, you know, more about it, and my mom was there looking up information with me as well, I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to angle for. And I didn't even know all it entailed at the time, but I just, you know, if I enjoy two fields and there's something that combine both of them, it just, to me, made sense that's what I'm going to do, regardless of how difficult it's going to be, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So from early on, you were exposed. And that's what made the difference. That makes a lot of difference when you're exposed from early on, because now you know what's available to you. You know what the options are, and you can work towards getting there once you know what the there is. Or, you know, so that's always a good thing, and that's an important thing to understand as well. Once children are exposed to all the things that they could do, they could be, that they have access to, that really opens up the horizon for them, literally speaking, because now I have information that I can work with. So yeah, that's definitely a good thing. But so it sounded like you had parents and teachers who were very involved in your school life. So talk about that and how that made a difference for you.
I mean, starting out with my parents, they, you know, and when you're young, you don't really appreciate it like you should, like you don't realize the sacrifice that your parents going through. But my mother would, you know, everything that going on at school, you know, every PTA meeting, she's involved. Everybody know her name, for better or worse. and she was just so involved and always there pushing me. Somebody that I have a great relationship with both my parents. So anything that happened at school, I talk to them. If, you know, somebody teased me, I talk to them. And you know, grades, if I get a great grade, I quickly tell them. If I get a bad grade, I don't feel afraid, you know, I don't feel like the repercussions go be so terrible that I'm going to hide it from them. So I think that relationship was super helpful because it allowed, you know, allowed them to be involved and be able to encourage me or guide me where I needed extra guidance, because they knew what was happening, right? Because we had that kind of relationship. And then my dad, he was, you know, even though he was working, you know, crazy hours, I remember sometimes come home so late when I was young, but if I had big projects here, I had to build one. I remember one, I can't remember what class it was, but maybe so, but I had to build like a whole community, like actual, you know, houses and all these kind of things. And he was there up at night with me cutting styrofoam to make the houses, cut wood to make street light on the streets. Then him go get a car battery and hook it up so that the street light actually lights up.
Wow.
And all that kind of stuff. It's just things that, you know, are ingrained in my memory, and they meant so much to me because they were so involved. Any kind of, you know, I remember one time my mom was up till 4 a.m. like printing and helping me work on some project I was working on. And it's crazy. It's absolutely, you know, the effort that they went through to ensure that I would be successful in school is amazing. Especially now that I'm older and I'm not married and I don't have any kids yet, and I already feel like my time is so strained. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
How they found the time, but they did. So yeah. So that was definitely a huge, you know, blessing in my life. And then, you know, having teachers, and again, because of that support at home, I generally performed well
at school.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it go a lot of times. Students who perform well in school, you know, teachers are easy. You know, I think teachers find it easier to support students who are performing, you know, well and you know, are looked at as the bright sparks or so on. So I ended up having a lot of good relationships with teachers as well, and they always kind of pushed me because I wasn't giving much trouble. You know, it was an easy relationship. Yeah. It was an easy relationship for them to maintain and encourage and so on, right? It's when that's not the case where you have to really, you know, that's where your passion and love for people have to take over for to be a compassionate and understanding teacher. But they were super, super involved in my education and pushing me from primary school, prep school, up to high school and so on. So yeah, so I owe a lot of it to the teachers as well.
And I can imagine how they responded to the news that you got your PhD, because so I know you from Instagram. I think that's where we met on Instagram.
Yeah.
And we've kind of built a little, you know, relationship.
Yeah.
You know, you support the platform, we support you and everything like that. And I was so excited. Come here, I'm over here with tears running down my face. I was like, he did it! It's like, it's no doctor coming to you, bitches. I was so stoned because I was like, it means a lot for you, of course, because you did it, but it also means a lot for Jamaica. Because here it is, this very, very young field with who and like most science field is very white. And here's this young Jamaican boy from Montego Bay with just these big dreams and lofty goals, and he fucking did it. And I was just like, oh my God, I got emotional. I really did. So I can imagine how your parents reacted. How did they react?
Yeah, my, you know, they were ecstatic. It's hard to even find the words to kind of describe. And, you know, just the feeling for me, like a lot of it was just, you know, a lot of the enjoyment for me just came from them, you know, their reaction and, and their excitement and them feeling, you know, feeling like you got the job done.
Yeah.
Like you know, you made appearance proud, and, you know, for the longest, that's been a lot of, you know, what drives me, because, you know, I have such, you know, I hold them in such high regard and so on. So I just, you know, I just want to make them proud. And you know, lucky for me, they don't apply any specific parameters like, oh, we're only proud if you become this specific thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that you excel in whatever you choose to do as, you know, as our child or whatever, as long as you excel in it, you know, that's what makes us proud. And it was great to really have that moment. And it's crazy because I haven't seen them in person since.
Yeah.
Like, I have not seen my parents, you know, because of COVID and all of that, and I'm still in the US. I've not been able to see them yet. I'm hoping to soon at some point. But, you know, I want to so badly celebrate with them in person.
Yeah.
But you know, the support has been there. A lot of teachers, I'm still, you know, I'm now, you know, friends with on Facebook and so on. So they also kind of congratulated me. And it was surprising to see how many people really, like, you know, realize how much people, you know, invested or it means so much, that you did this thing and they're so proud. And, you know, even people you don't know paying attention to you, you know, reach out to me and congratulate me. So it was amazing.
But you know how Jamaicans are. We we pull for each other, especially on an international stage. I mean, once a Jamaican involved, you know, man, you can't get with support nobody else. You know what I mean? And it was kind of like that. And let me tell you what was my proudest moment. You had on your lapel, your Jamaican flag lapel, and I think at one point you went into patois in your presentation. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
I gave my defense with my Jamaica pin and my lapel for sure. I always
So it was about the pride. It was about the and you know we are proud people. It's like, it was about the pride and it's the fact that one hour we make it, we're boss. Because that's kind of what we feel like, right? We're boss. One hour we're boss and we'll make it. And in such an unconventional field, and that's for me where, you know, it kind of even exceeded anything else because it was such an unconventional field. And it's somewhere where people don't normally expect Jamaicans to excel, even though we have had scientists, high caliber scientists in this coming from this country.
Of course.
Right? Mm-hmm. But it's just always good. And then you're young. It helps that you can look pan, you know? So a lot of things are happening. I was just super proud. So I can just imagine everybody else. But what did it mean for you on an internal level to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What was that for you? What did Kamir say to Kamir after that happened? What was that internal dialogue?
I think, you know, a lot of it was a reflective moment for me because it's such a long journey and that moment represented not just me finishing graduate school, but, you know, more or less finishing school, right? Yeah. I started out, like, I've been in school since I was 1 year and 10 months. I start school early
because
apparently me they get too much trouble at the house. And my parents say, "All right, we have to just make a teacher and deal with them," right? And I've been in school. Not, you know, I didn't take any gap years.
Yeah,
I didn't take any breaks after undergrad and so on. So it was just like a reflective moment, and, you know, for me, what being persistent and determined and just pursuing a goal with like, and you know, this relentless, like this relentless fervor and what you can do. It was just, it felt good. Like, it's hard to even describe that moment. I sat down in that chair after the defense was done and after they told me I had a PhD and all that kind of stuff. And I just sat there and I was just like thinking. And I was like thanking God. And I was just like thinking about my parents and thinking about my little brother, my little sister, who, you know, I hope, you know, all the things I've done makes them proud and you know, gives them drive to excel in whatever areas they choose, and just kind of all along the people I've met and people have helped me and so on along the way. It was just an amazing moment for me, and it really got me excited again, because I was like, you know, we're closing the book on this chapter, like the school thing done now, and now it's about like all, you know, new ways in which I can impact the world or my community or even the next person I meet, right? Yeah. It's just an exciting time, and I think, you know, the COVID also made it very, you know, I think because of COVID, a lot more people were able to at least share in that defense, because normally in person is people flying up here. So, you know, more than likely, a lot of my friends in Jamaica wouldn't be viewing my defense and all that stuff. So even being able to have them, because it was on Zoom now, being able to have them, you know, have people from a lot more people, you know, my aunts and so on, be involved.
Oh, so your parents got to see it live?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so they got to see it live. They got to see it live, and I had aunts in present too, and a bunch of other people. So that was great. Yeah, it's hard to describe, and I still think it hasn't sunk in yet. Like every time I hear Dr. Ricketts or so on, it still kind of throw me off.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Wow.
I think a lot of it has to do because I haven't really been able to like celebrate it with the family in person.
Yeah.
So it hasn't really sunk in.
But wow, I can just imagine how that feels, because I can tell you that from here. So I was here once you made the announcement. I was like, yes. And I told everybody I know, and they're like, what? What are you talking about? It's like, just listen to what I'm saying.
and it's funny because, you know, along the way, you have a lot of stuff though, because, you know, there have been times where I was like, oh, what, should I have gone for a PhD? Like, this is 5 years, I'm a 20s.
Yeah.
You know, you have friends who, you know, they finish undergrad and immediately go start working. And, you know, there's all those moments where you start doubting certain decisions. So in that moment, it's vindication. You know, I was able to accomplish it, and you know, this was my part, right? And no other part was mine but this one.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, a lot of that led into the feelings as well. All the feels.
All the feels.
All the feels.
Well, come here. I don't want to keep you up any longer. Dr. Ricketts. Hey! you need to make sure that people address you properly. You know, it's Dr. Ricketts to you, ma'am. I love it. I'm so proud of you, and congratulations again on what is a monumental achievement. I mean, it's major. It's really major. It's major for you. It's major for the field. It's major for our country. It's just major, 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 big things.
Yeah,
you were doing a bunch of other stuff. You were doing Minds of Jamaica, which you founded. It's an initiative you founded. You were doing the app, the COVID app.
Yeah.
And you were building a platform for Minds of Jamaica. So you are busy. Yeah.
I know we have another web app that we're working on to help schools kind of monitor like student health and track temperature and so on. But we haven't publicly dropped that yet. But I guess you're the first platform to mention it on. So we have one school running on it fully right now as a pilot, and then we're trying to expand. So
is that a part of the Mind of Jamaica initiative?
Yeah, it's like on our it's a part of Minds of Initiative, but you know, more on our technology development side.
All right. So for persons who don't know, quickly explain to us what the Minds of Initiative is. Which I just happen to be a member of.
Yes, of course. You're one of our lovely minds. So the Minds of Initiative is really a platform or effort to democratize access. At first in career mentorship, because that's something I'm very passionate about. But, you know, expanding to other areas as well. And, And what that means for us is launching these, these platforms, these culture-specific platforms, the first of which is Minds of Jamaica, which houses, you know, young professionals in a variety of fields from that specific country or culture, in this case, Jamaica. So we have Jamaican, you know, professionals on the platform who have made available, made their time available to helping students who are coming up and want to learn more. So we're trying to really have that hosted now on the web, so it's easy to tap into and easy to engage with people who have kind of walked that path before, so students can get some idea, some realistic idea of either what it takes to get there or what options are available for them. And a lot of that is inspired by my own experiences, right? Because so many people were there for me to like put things on my radar, and I don't think enough students get that access. Yeah. So we're trying to make it super easy. So whether they're Portmore, whether they're Trelawney, wherever you're at, right, on the island, you can tap in and get access to a lot of professionals. Because I think too much of the professional students are exposed to is dependent on where they are in the country, yeah. Right? So the kind of professionals a Kingston High School student exposed to, it's probably much different than somebody who live in like deep, you know, St. Elizabeth, for example, or something. So we're trying to even the playing field and make career mentorship a little bit more equitable for us.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, come here. In case nobody not tell you today, you're a phenomenal human being. Just on that level. Just on that level. No, and I take every opportunity I can to let you and everybody else I know who I see out there really actually not just doing things for themselves and accomplishing them for themselves, but literally dragging us along with them. Right? It's like, y'all need to come with me. I ain't doing this by myself.
Yeah.
Right? And I think you are all phenomenal human beings. And
it's great.
Yeah. And the work you're doing is amazing with the Minds. Yeah. It's an amazing initiative.
And just to tie everything full circle, now on the Minds of Initiative side, we have a bioinformatics training program now.
Wow.
That we are now exposing Caribbean students, high school students, our college students, and we're allowing them to work virtually with, you know, professors from NYU Med, Cornell Med, Harvard, and that kind of stuff. And they work virtually on different projects within computational biology. So we've had quite a few. We've had about I think we're in the 20s now, 20 plus students, Caribbean students, you know, a majority of them from, you know, high school students in Jamaica or university students in Jamaica who've participated. And then we've had quite a few of them reach out to me afterwards. I was like, because they did that program, they're now considering computational biology as their career. So I've had meetings with a lot of Jamaican students where they're like, okay, we did this program. Now we want to ask you, okay, I'm a first year at UWE. If I want to be a computational biologist, what kind of things I have to do in my spare time? What kind of courses I need to be looking at and so on? And that was always my goal, right? Because just exposing them, it was the first time they did it. And after they did the program, and the program is just a week. We tried to make it really quick and really engaging. Program just a week. And then after that, now they're angling a lot of their decisions now because they think that's what they want to do. And that's the importance of exposure, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that's something I'm super happy about.
Okay. Come here. Again, awesome, awesome stuff. Super proud of you and the work that you're doing. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. And grateful on behalf of a grateful nation. thank you so very much for everything.
And I
expect some amazing things come in your future. I know you're just getting started. You're just warming up. You're just getting warmed up because you're doing all sorts of stuff and you're into everything. But wishing you all the best. And I know you will do well. And I am so happy that you have the family bond and friends and stuff that really, and a community too, a wider community now. That supports you and your efforts, so you know you're safe in that way. And you know we Jamaicans, any white person say anything to your side, well, yes, you just need to let us know. Yes, if people need to get checked, okay. Yeah, but for real though, seriously.
We'll do.
All right, Kamir, thank you so much for talking to me. And looking forward to more great things coming from you.
Thanks for having me, man, and creating the space for this.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
I had such a great time talking to Kamer, and I hope you guys can now see where my excitement comes from. You know when you know the smarty future just bright and that the manga just be great. We've never met, but the pride I feel as a Jamaican to know that here's this fellow Jamaican out here doing the damn thing and just being absolutely amazing, and to know that that is grounded in Jamaica. He's a product fully of this nation is even more amazing. We need to support our children. We need to expose our children, and we need to reassure our children that no matter where they go and what they choose to be, as long as they are productive and they're contributing to the society, they're gonna be okay, and we're gonna be okay with them just being okay. Yeah, we need to do more of that, guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Digital Jamaica Podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It will really help the show. And if you have any questions or you want to reach out to us, you want to leave a comment, email us at digitaljamaicapod@gmail.com, and you can follow us over on our social media for even more conversations. We go live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube with more amazing Jamaicans doing more amazing things. All right, so we're on Twitter at Digital Jamaica, and on Instagram at digital.jamaica, and on YouTube at Digital Jamaica. Until next time, take care.